Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hi, my name is Ed Camo, and this month we're doing a joint broadcast between Campus Firewatch Radio and Fire Marshal's Corner because we're looking at the 111th Congress that's just convened in Washington with the change in the administration. There's certainly a lot happening in D.C., and a lot of this is relevant to our listeners, both in the fire service and in the campus community, because there are certainly going to be a number of bills coming through Congress looking at all the issues that we're interested in. So we're going to put together, we did put together a very good panel of people to talk about it. And I'm also going to be covering the Campus Fire Safety Right to Know Act. So let's sit back and listen to this month's joint episode of Campus Fire Watch Radio and Fire Marshal's Corner. Now we're going to get into the Campus Fire Safety Right to Know regulations that are being developed right now in Congress. This is legislation that was 8 years in the making. It got introduced in 2000 by then-Senator Torricelli and Congressman Pascrell from New Jersey, and it followed the tragic fire that happened at Seton Hall University that killed three freshmen. They introduced legislation in both the House and the Senate calling for schools to report fire safety information to the Secretary of Education. Well, that was 2000, and as I've learned in Congress, nothing really happens very quickly. It does take a long time for some of this stuff to make its way through. No matter how good we think it is or how important it is, it does take time. And last August, it got signed into law as part of the Higher Education Opportunity Act. And that's how a lot of legislation gets passed in Congress. It may not stand on its own merits, but it'll get rolled into another bill. And the Higher Education Opportunity Act was due for reauthorization. So it got rolled into that, and it was signed into law. But actually getting legislation passed is only half the battle. The more important part, probably, is the regulations that have to be developed that tell the various organizations or the various departments within the government how to implement the law and what the intent of the law is. So what has happened now is the Department of Education has been given the responsibility for writing the regulations for the whole Higher Education Opportunity Act, which is a huge bill. It's absolutely massive, of which a very small segment of that is Campus Fire Safety Right to Know Act. Well, to make sure that that didn't get lost in the mix, since it is, like I said, a small part of a huge bill, last fall, the Department of Education was holding hearings across the country to get public input into any aspect of the Higher Education Opportunity Act. And so what we're able to do is arrange for people to testify at these hearings. They either spoke in person or they submitted written testimony at these hearings. And they held five of them across the country. I believe it was five across the country. I happened to testify at the one in Providence. And there were some other people testifying at other ones or submitting written testimony. And the intent was to make sure that right to know stayed on the radar screen of the Department of Education as an important issue. Well, we were successful, because what they did is then, as a result of these hearings, developed five different teams that would write the regulations, what they call negotiating rulemaking teams, or NEGREG, I guess is the acronym for it out of Washington. And team number five is the one that's going to be responsible for writing the Campus Fire Safety Right to Know regulations. Now, what they also do is say, okay, we'll take nominations for people to be on these teams. And I was fortunate enough to be nominated by the Michael Minger Foundation to be a member of this team, and the Department of Education selected me. I was very flattered that they did select me to be on this team, and I really appreciate the opportunity. So what happens is there's a series of meetings down in D.C. Now they have three-day meetings scheduled over March and April and May where the teams will get together and kind of hash out what the regulations are going to be. So, and then it's going to be a first for me. Never done it before. So it is going to be an interesting experience. But I don't want to do this in a vacuum by any stretch of the imagination. So what I've done is on the Campus Firewatch website, if you go to www.campus-firewatch.com, you'll see a link on the page there where I've set up a web page that you can download the actual language of the legislation so you can see what is going to be required as part of the Campus Fire Safety Right to Know. And I've also created two other things, a wiki and a Google discussion group. A wiki, for those of you that aren't familiar with it, is an online site, program, whatever you want to call it, where you can actually write in, right there, your suggestions for what you think the language should be. So if you look at it, you'll see a three-column setup there. One column is the actual legislation or the actual law. The other is some discussion points. And in the third column, you can sit there and you can just write in what you think the regulation should cover. And here's a great chance for you to offer your thoughts and ideas and get on the ground floor of this legislation and help write collaboratively with your peers across the country. We've had a number of people going in there right now, giving comments and ideas. So the more people we have involved in this, the better we can make this, these regulations, in terms of being effective yet accurately portraying the fire safety that exists on campuses across the country. I've also set up a Google discussion group, which is, for those of you familiar with those listservs, where you can just communicate back and forth about ideas and suggestions and just set up an email discussion. We've had some of that going on as well. So I really encourage you to go to campus-firewatch.com, where you can take a look at the regulations, and you can give your input into the wiki. I'll take all this information down to D.C., and be sure to include it when we're going through the negotiated rulemaking phase in terms of trying to hammer these out and come up with ideas or things that will work for everybody. Just a real quick overview of what Right to Know is, in case you haven't had a chance to go there yet. Essentially, the Right to Know regulations will not mandate schools do anything other than report. What they have to do is report to the Secretary of Education every single year, annual fire safety reports that will include things like the number of fires, the number of injuries, number of fatalities, the amount of property damage that has occurred, a description of each on-campus housing that will include how many beds are protected by sprinklers, how many beds are protected by fire alarms, how many fire drills they do, their policies, and probably to my thinking, a really important critical part of it is how much fire safety education they provide to students. I think that's just absolutely key. I really do. It's one of the things that's just really underserved. So the Right to Know requires schools only to report. They don't have to do any of these things. But I feel that by having it out there, that they are going to have some pressure on them to start doing some of these activities, start installing sprinkler systems, fire alarm systems, start doing fire safety education, holding fire drills, which I think is going to be really key to improving the level of fire safety on our campuses, but also through education, improving the level of expertise that these students are going to have or knowledge they're going to have, not only for the time they're at school, but after they graduate. So they will become a more fire-safe generation, so to speak. So, again, I really encourage you, please, go visit the website, take a look at the wiki, add your thoughts in there, join the discussion group. The first meeting down in Washington, D.C. starts on March 2nd. So I'd certainly love to have as much information in hand as I can when I go down there and meet with the other folks to start negotiating the rules for the Campus Fire Safety Right to Know Act.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Well, joining us now on both Campus Firewatch Radio and Fire Marshal's Corner, we have a panel of people that are down there in D.C. that are going to really kind of take us through a little bit of the ropes of what's happening down there in D.C. with the 111th Congress and some of the legislation that's going to be in play, some of the priorities, and maybe some ideas on what we can do to help move this legislation along. Joining us today is Sean Carroll, who's the Director of Government Affairs for the Congressional Fire Services Institute. Sarah Yerkes, who's the Senior Vice President, Government Relations for the International Code Council, and Ken LaSalle, who's the Director of Government Relations for the International Association of Fire Chiefs. Thanks, everybody, for taking the time and joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Sean, how about we start off with you? Some big changes have happened in Washington, obviously, with a new administration coming in and some changes within Congress itself. And from the Fire Caucus point of view, what are some of the changes you see, and what kind of direction do you think things might be going in with Congress?
Well, as far as the caucus goes, it should be interesting. You know, there's been some significant turnover in Congress in the past two congressional elections. So the size of the Fire Caucus has shrunk a little bit just due to retirements, members not returning. It's traditionally been the largest caucus in Congress, which I believe it still may be, but we have lost a number of members. We're just shy of about 300 members of the caucus right now, which is impressive, but, you know, obviously, you know, in our opinion, there's no reason why every member of Congress shouldn't be a member of the Congressional Fire Services Caucus. Mm-hmm. So we're working with the current leadership of the caucus to really do a big recruitment drive, and especially with some of the newer, younger members of Congress to get them engaged in fire service issues and active in the caucus. That said, the leadership of the caucus, you know, which has always been some of our strongest points, you know, we've had some great leaders in the Senate. Currently, we have, you know, Senator McCain, who is the longest-serving co-chair of the caucus, and, you know, fresh off his presidential election bid, he is still a co-chair of the caucus. Senator Susan Collins from my home state, the great state of Maine, and Senator Christopher Dodd are there. And in the House, we have the House Majority Leader, Steny Hoyer, Congressman Peter King from New York, Congresswoman Joanne Emerson from Missouri, and Congressman Rob Andrews from New Jersey. So we have some great members there. Probably the most significant loss in the caucus leadership would have to be Senator Joseph Biden, who, of course, was elected into the vice presidency. So the caucus leadership is currently meeting right now to decide who will fill that open spot in the leadership. There's some, you know, it will be a Senate Democrat as a bipartisan caucus. There's an equal number of Democrats and Republicans from each house that serve in the leadership. So they're looking at the current Senate Democrats and, you know, who would be appropriate to fill that spot. Luckily, we have, you know, some members of the Senate who have been very supportive of fire service issues, who have been there for a lot of, you know, for a lot of our issues. So now it's just a matter of, you know, trying to decide who out of those many qualified candidates would be best to fill that seat. So they're currently looking at that. We're hoping to hear back from them shortly on who that would be.
And it certainly has to be beneficial to have a friend in the White House, so to speak, with Vice President Biden moving up there. I would have to imagine that probably works to the caucus's benefit and the fire service's benefit.
You know, it's always good to have allies, obviously, especially in, you know, such a senior position. But it's also important to remember, you know, as vice president, you know, he's, you know, obviously has a lot of duties on his plate, a lot of people vying for his attention. You know, as much as we would like to think that, you know, fire service issues should be the primary focus of all of our policymakers, there's a lot, you know, especially for a vice president to look at. Important thing to remember is you need the right people on staff in between you and the vice president or the president or even members of Congress. So one thing for the fire service to look at is, you know, not only in these, you know, senior cabinet level positions, but, you know, the heads of some of these agencies and the people that they're filling in there to make sure they have the right people and the qualified people so we can get the right information to our friends who are in these, you know, very powerful positions like Vice President Biden.
Right. Now, you mentioned a recruitment drive. I mean, that's something that I'm sure constituents can play a role, too, in terms of encouraging their member of Congress, if they are not a member of the caucus, to become one.
Absolutely. In fact, if you go to CFSI's website, not only do we have a listing of all the current caucus members with links to their website, which contains their contact information, we have sample letters up there to encourage your member of Congress to either join the caucus or to thank them for their membership in the caucus and encourage their further involvement.
Yeah, and that's what, CFSI.org?
Correct.
Is the website? Yep. Okay. Yeah, great amount of resources on that website. I use it very frequently, too, when I'm looking for stuff about what's going on the Hill.
Well, our staff is working to improve it every day, so.
Well, you're doing a great job out there. You really are.
Thank you.
Yep. Sarah, you know, I'd be kind of interested in your take on the changes that have happened in D.C. From your point of view, what do you see happening up there on the Hill with some of the new coming in and the older moving out, and what change in perspective do you see happening?
Well, Ed, we're excited also at ICC about the changes and looking forward to working with the Congress and the administration on several issues. Last year, or actually it was 2 years ago, ICC worked very hard with the members of Congress to get a piece of legislation introduced, the Community Building Code Administration Grant Act, which would provide assistance to states for compliance, implementation of codes, safety codes, any codes, electrical, the building, fire, residential construction, commercial construction, everything. And we were very excited. We went as far as getting the bill passed in the House, referred to the Senate, but then with the economy and the crisis at the end of the Congress, it just was not a priority. So we're looking forward to getting that bill reintroduced. We've already met with Congressman Dennis Moore from Kansas, and he was our champion, and he's agreed to introduce the piece of legislation again. So we're looking forward to that, and we'll be working on the Senate side also to find bipartisan support for the bill. So we're excited about that. And, of course, with this new administration and the focus, the stimulus package, the focus on higher energy efficiency and energy conservation and sustainability, we are looking forward to working with the administration and particularly with the Department of Energy. Our International Energy Conservation Code was referenced in the stimulus package. There's a requirement in that bill that states would have to comply, will have to meet or exceed the 2009 IECC, and they have 8 years. Within 8 years, the governor has to certify the state will start to initiate the proceedings to adopt the 2009 IECC. So we're excited about that. It's going to be new territory for ICC. As most of you know, ICC has traditionally been a very local and state-focused organization. We were a consolidated organization of three regional organizations. But now, as a national organization, we are focusing also on national issues and always thinking with our local member, the local jurisdiction, the state in mind. But it's exciting. It's exciting for me, and I hope exciting for our members to see the kinds of stuff the organization is doing here in D.C.
Yeah. And just kind of that's not a national issue, well, national in terms of the government, but ICC just recently had the sprinkler change made in the residential building code or fire code. They now require residential sprinklers, which is just a great change for the fire service. Everybody's very delighted over seeing that happen. And, that's just going to be a great movement across the country, just getting that adopted into the code. It's going to have such a significant impact on fire safety across the country. So we're very happy about that, obviously.
Well, yes, that is very exciting. And there are many other fire safety and other safety features in the 2009 residential code, including carbon monoxide alarms required in new construction and other prescriptive details for more affordable installation of multi-purpose piping systems for fire sprinklers and some other safety requirements in the code. So we're very excited, and ICC is encouraging the states to adopt the 2009 IRC in its entirety. It's the time has come. You know, it's been in the works for a while, and so the staff is now busy advocating and promoting the adoption of those 2009 codes.
Ken Asala, IFC, International Association of Fire Chiefs. That's an organization that's always also been active on the Hill. What do you see coming down the road, or what changes do you see in Congress from your point of view?
Well, I think a lot of them have already been addressed. Obviously, there's kind of there's a new larger dynamic in the fact that you've got a president and a Congress all from the same party. The first time that there are all Democrats since the 1994 elections. So it'll be interesting to see. There's a couple of different issues. Back in the old, when President Bush was president, when it came to issues like the Fire and Safer grants, President Bush would always, his administration would always try to reduce funding for the fire grants and then zero out the safer grants. And then we could always work with Congress to increase the funding for those programs. So in that way, it was an interesting kind of dynamic. Now, when you've got a president and Congress that are all on the same side, as it were, it'll be interesting to see in a couple of weeks when when President Obama's budget request comes out, you know, what his requests are for important fire service programs like the U.S. Fire Administration and the Fire and Safer Grant Program, and then some of the wildland fire fighting programs, and to see how Congress deals with his budget requests, see, you know, if there's a variance between what's good for the fire service and kind of what's proposed, and then how, you know, this new dynamic will affect things.
Mm-hmm. Now, the things like the SAFER grants are always a priority every year. And are there any other, and I'm kind of throwing this out to all of you, you know, for the fire service point of view, what are some of the other pieces of legislation you see coming down the road that might be something that we all need to really keep an eye on and make sure that it moves through Congress?
Well, I'd say probably of probably primary importance to the fire service. The Assistance to Firefighters Grant Program and SAFER are both up for reauthorization. Mm-hmm. The fire grants reauthorization period ends this fiscal year. So in order for those programs to continue, Congress needs to reauthorize, basically just renew the authorizing legislation for those programs. So we'll be working with our congressional allies to take a look at them, make any necessary tweaks, so to say, to strengthen the programs and keep those running. I think they're both very popular programs. You know, especially the fire grant has been fairly successful. So, you know, Ken's correct that, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the appropriations outlook looks like. But, you know, while we're working on that, we also need to, continue the programs for future years.
Mm-hmm. And I understand the Fire Sprinkler Incentive Act is probably going to be coming back around again this year as well.
We're working on it. We've been having some meetings. I know both Sarah and Ken and their staffs have been working on it as well. We've started building a fairly large coalition of various organizations, some in fire and, you know, and in other disciplines as well, to talk to Congress about that. There's some talk of a possible tax package in the works. No one's really sure what that's going to look like yet or what the timetable is on that, but that would obviously be the perfect vehicle to move that legislation.
You know, now with the stimulus bill having been signed, you know, as we're recording this, just, I believe it was yesterday, is the focus going to be able to turn to some of these issues, or is that still just the overriding priority that you folks see on the Hill? I mean, is the stimulus just really taking a lot of the energy that might be used elsewhere?
I guess there's a couple of things. You know, first, Congress is going to be focused on two major things. First, obviously the economic recession, getting the economy and the country back up and running again. And then two is going to be regarding you know, the military action going on, the wars going on in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's going to you know, pretty much keep Congress very focused. However, they still have to pass all the annual appropriations bills. There's still a great opportunity for passing a number of the important fire service bills, like the Fire and Safer Grant Bill, which Sean was talking about, like the bill that Sarah was talking about. Also, you know, the Fire Sprinkler Incentive Bill, the Volunteer Job Protection Bill, and other important pieces of fire service legislation. I think it's incumbent upon the listeners to this podcast and the members of the fire service to especially get in touch with their local congressmen to bring these issues to their attention and bring our bills to their attention, and then you know, that'll increase the abilities of getting our bills passed. I mean, the good news is with the economic stimulus package and the issue regarding all the different bailouts for the housing industry and financial bailouts and things like that, and the wars, they're going to be highly contentious. I think one of our strengths is the fact that we can argue that all of our legislation is actually bipartisan. It's good for public safety. So I think there's going to be some interest, hopefully, in moving our legislation because it is bipartisan, non-controversial, and good for the public safety.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of, you know, nice segue there, Ken. I appreciate that, because my next question is really going to be, you know, okay, for the listeners out there, how do they work on the Hill? You know, what are some of the effective things that they can do to reach out and help move some of this along, And Sarah, you know, you've been up there quite a while, so you've had a lot of experience in that whole area. You know, what would you suggest to people of effective ways, you know, email, visits, phones, you know, how can they really be working with their senator and their representative to get this stuff along?
Well, all those, but most importantly, in my experience and in my decades here in Washington, D.C., it's all about trust and building the relationships. And as we all know, staff, there's a huge turnover in staff on the Hill, and the average age is 26. So the education process is ongoing. You have to be very patient and continuously work with staffers on the Hill, educating them about our organizations, our issues, and so forth. I have always told my staff it's important to go up there and meet even when we don't need anything, because when we need something, we already have the base, a good relationship built with these folks. They're much more keen to listen to you and be receptive to your ideas. So building that trust. When there's an issue and we need to take action, the personal visit, I think, is the best thing. And not so much the representative, for example, not me as a paid employee of ICC going up to the Hill, visiting with members or staffers to talk about our issues, but bringing in people from their districts that they can relate to, people that are really out there who have no vested interests. They're not going to be seen as, well, paid a lobbyist or an advocacy representative or that type of in that type of role. The personal visits and then the grassroots support we've always used very successfully, for example, to get support for our community grant program. We got our members throughout the country involved through our chapters. They sent emails, they called, and those were very, very effective. Letter writing is not as effective anymore because of the mail delivery restrictions on the Hill. A letter can take 2-3 weeks to get to a member. So emails and phone calls are the preferred way. That would be my recommendation. But again, building the relationship and not feeling offended if you go up to the Hill and you meet with a staffer because you don't see the member. In my opinion, the opportunity with the member is that photo opportunity. And, of course, you need the member to be supportive, and the member is the one who can actually make it happen. But the staff does the work, and working with the staff has been some of my most pleasant experiences because they're highly professional, extremely intelligent people. And then if you have the luck of knowing some old-timers, people who've been on the Hill for many, many years, who know the issues, who understand the issues, it's just a great experience working with those folks. And the same thing with the federal, with the executive side of the government.
I mean, and you really kind of hit the nail on the head there that I was going to bring up in terms of, I found that too, that when we've been up there with the students doing, you know, the launch on Campus Fire Safety Month, we went around, and they were all excited about the possibility of meeting members, but in reality, they were meeting with the staffers, and that's really where the work gets done, is with the staff. You know, it certainly is, like you said, that photo op is nice, but knowing the key staff person to deal with is really what you need to look for. And that kind of brings up another question, Sean. I'll throw this one to you. You know, when you call a member's office, is there a type of position you should ask for, like an education liaison, or, you know, who is, when you want to get in touch with a specific person, who should you ask for?
Well, I mean, each member's office has specific staff that cover various issue areas. So depending on, you know, what specifically you're looking to talk to them about, whether it be, you know, a tax issue, homeland security issues, education, they have staffers that focus on those particular areas. You know, as Sarah mentioned, normally when you get to meet the member, it's only for that five-minute photo op. Just because the very nature of the job, members of Congress just have so many demands upon their time. It's not that they don't want to meet with you for 5 minutes or they don't want to be an expert in your issue area. It's not possible. You know, they have 1,000 other people that want to meet with them that are convinced their issue is more important than yours. So, and that's why they have staff dedicated to those specific issue areas so that they can give you that attention. and they do have people that can advise them. So obviously, you know, when you're calling the office or you're paying a visit, you know, they'll have that staffer dedicated to your issue. And like Sarah said, it's good to build that relationship with them. I couldn't agree more because, you know, yeah, they may be a 26-year-old kid, and sometimes, you know, it's hard to get beyond that, especially when you're the, you know, 20-year veteran of the fire service. But they're there to serve you, and you can be actually as much of an aid to them as they can be to you. You know, the more you build that relationship, the more they're going to learn about your issue, and you become that resource for them when the member has a question.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for them to be able to pick up the phone and call you, just as, you know, it's important for you to be able to call them when you have a concern. So it goes back and forth. It's a mutual relationship. And just building on what Sarah said, I would also encourage people to, you know, visit the district offices. Every member of Congress has offices within their congressional district. Stop by and pay a visit, you know, make appointments, you know. You shouldn't only contact your member of Congress when you're in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their main focus should be back home in the district. So build that relationship there as well. When the member's in town on a congressional recess, you know, invite them to come by the firehouse or, you know, come to a community event and see what it is that you're doing. And, you know, build the relationship that way as well.
That's an excellent suggestion. It's one that I think, yeah, we have our focus on D.C. so often, but we forget about the district. I know I do.
All politics is local.
All politics is local. Tip O'Neill, wasn't it? He's the one that said that.
Good Irishman.
Well, now it's time for scuttlebutt, I guess. You know, there are a couple of positions down there that need to be filled relevant to the fire service, the head of FEMA and USFA. What do you guys hear? Do you hear anything?
I won't speak for my colleagues. I've heard that there have been discussions with some people, but no public announcements have been made about any names or, you know, we haven't heard of any nominations coming down the pike. I would think that at least FEMA would be something that will be filled fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I know that was the intention. That said, you obviously want to make sure you have the right qualified person in there. So, you know, obviously Chief Paulison did, a wonderful job with the agency and really turned it around in a time of crisis and controversy. And I think it's important to find someone as qualified to now step in and continue building FEMA up and, you know, making it the core portion of DHS to fulfill that mission.
Yep.
Long answer short, I haven't heard anything official coming down, but we're waiting with anticipation.
Yeah.
I don't know if Ken or Sarah have.
No, I'm the same, Sean. I have heard rumors, but nothing has been really set. We, of course, are very interested also in those positions, those appointments. Having worked for James LeWitt, who set the bar rather high at FEMA, we're hoping that it'll be someone of an equal caliber. And Chief Paulison, as Sean said, did a tremendous job. So we hope the agency keeps its elevated status. If it can't go higher, then at least remain where it is and with a good person heading it, because I think that's very important. To the fire service and the emergency management services of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ken, have you heard it? You heard anything, Ken?
I have. What Sean and Sarah said is correct. I mean, at least at the time of this broadcasting, there's a rumor a week, but nobody's been solid. You know, there's been no solid nominations. I think one thing to point out is the administration's been very systematic. They so far have nominated and had confirmed the Secretary of Homeland Security. They're now setting up a possible nominee for Deputy Homeland Security Secretary, and then maybe after they get that person cleared through, then maybe we'll see the FEMA administrator after that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, one thing I kind of like to wrap up here with, I think, is throw it back to you, Sean. You guys have the CFSI dinner coming up in about a month.
We do, April 1st and 2nd.
April 1st. Well, here's your chance to give a little plug, you know. What are you guys going to be doing for dinner this year?
It's the 21st annual National Fire and Emergency Services Dinner and Seminars. The theme this year is new beginnings and new opportunities. You know, we have a new administration, a new Congress, a lot of new members in town. So this is a good chance for the fire service to really bring its issues forward. We'll have 2 days of seminars starting on April 1st. Tentative schedule is up on the website now, but a bunch of great topics. Some of our national leaders, federal officials, members of Congress will be speaking on a variety of topics. Opportunities for people to go up on the Hill, meet with their members of Congress, and we'll wrap everything up with the dinner on Thursday, April 2nd. Leadership of the Congressional Fire Services Caucus has been invited to speak. We'll give out a few awards, and we've invited both the president and vice president to speak. We haven't heard anything back yet. It's a little early for the White House to make any commitments on that, but we're keeping our fingers crossed. We normally get some kind of commitment from the executive branch, so... I don't want to get anyone's hopes up, but I think we'll have a very good program, and the Capitol Steps will be performing at the dinner, which for anyone that isn't familiar with them, they're kind of a musical comedy troupe here in D.C.
There's
a lot of political humor and kind of has fun with everyone there. So I think it'll be a nice little change for the dinner, but it should be an exciting evening. And plenty of details on our website, and, you know, everybody is welcome to come, and we hope to see everyone there.
Well, you say everyone is welcome to come, and from the past experience, I think everybody does come.
Yeah, we get about 2,200 people there, so it's 2,000 of our closest friends, I like to say.
It is a remarkable event. I've certainly enjoyed the time down there, and it is a great chance to network, and the seminars are just great in terms of learning a lot of what we've been talking about here, you know, what are the priorities and how to work on Capitol Hill and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think Congress enjoys it. They've come to know that, you know, that week is pretty much fire week. They get used to, you know, prepared to see all the Maltese crosses in the hallways of Congress, and they really like to really focus on our issues that week. So we just got to get them to focus on the other 51 weeks out of the year.
Well, we've been talking with Sean Carroll, who's the Director of Government Affairs with the Congressional Fire Services Institute, Sarah Yerkes, who's the Senior Vice President in Government Relations with International Code Council, and Ken LaSala, who's the Director of Government Relations with the International Association of Fire Chiefs, about the 111th Congress. And I really thank all of you for taking the time and joining us here today.
Thank you, Ed, very much.
Thanks, Ed.
Thanks, Ed.
Well, we've had a great show today. We've been covering the Campus Fire Safety Right to Know, and then we had a great discussion with Sean Carroll, Sarah Yerkes, and Ken LaSala, who are all experts down there in Washington, D.C. I've known them all for a number of years, and they are the people that are in the know down there when it comes to how Congress works and how to get things through and how to work the Hill, so to speak. So some great information from all of them, and also an overview of what we might be looking for in the 111th Congress down in Washington, D.C. So really appreciate you taking the time and joining us today, as this has been a joint show here between Campus Firewatch Radio and Fire Marshal's Corner. My name is Ed Camo.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.